Welcome to SILRAP Podcasts. You are about to listen to a service of the Center for International Law Research and Policy.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is a great pleasure for me to welcome you all to this international expert meeting on quality control in preliminary examination. By the way, my name is Martin Sørby. I'm a Norwegian ambassador to the Netherlands. Norway has supported this project, just as we supported the preceding project on quality control in fact-finding. We find the approach of both projects novel and important. Both concern how we work with facts concerning core international crimes in ways that are cost-effective, fair, and lead to accountability when appropriate. Both seek to strengthen the fact work component of the documentation and pre-investigation of core international crimes. Both pay attention to the cost of this fact work and the need to increase cost efficiency where possible. The term quality control is technical and neutral. It captures a challenge common to all criminal justice systems, not only those working on core international crimes. The term invites an open and trusting consultation on how we can improve. The term disarms. That is helpful. The detailed conference concept note and program also make it clear that we are not only considering preliminary examination in international criminal jurisdictions, but also in national jurisdictions. The aim is to analyze common challenges and ways to improve. This is important. It is noteworthy that so many persons from the ICC Office of the Prosecutor are present here today, a number of whom are in the program. This shows how relevant this research project is to practice. It also points to the significant future potential for national criminal justice agencies to observe carefully and learn from the ICC's daily work when distilled systematically in the way this conference program allows. Given the amount of resources that are invested in the ICC, it would only be natural that its work processes become a source of study for national criminal justice actors. This is positive, and it is a reminder to the ICC how important the way it operates is. We now have opening statements by Judge Liu Dacun, who is Vice President of the ICTY and ICTR, Professors Morten Bergsmo and Karsten Stahn, and by Mr. Eduardo Toledo, who is Senior Legal Officer of the International Nuremberg Principles Academy. Each speaker is asked to speak from the lectern using this small microphone, as SILRAP records the lectures for the purposes of a wider audience than we could accommodate in the historical reading room today. With that, I give you, Judge Liu, the floor. Thank you very much.
His Excellency Ambassador Martin Sørby, Professor Morten Bergsmo, Professor Karsten Stahn, and Mr. Toledo, ladies and gentlemen, it is my great honor and privilege to be invited to take part in this QCPE conference and deliver a speech. I would like to thank Professor Bergsmo and the organizers of this conference for their kind invitation. The Center for International Law Research and Policy, led by Professor Bergsmo, has successfully held many academic activities in more than 30 countries to disseminate the knowledge of international law and international humanitarian law, and promote the exchanges of the ideas on many semantic issues. I personally took part in many symposiums and conferences on the subjects such as positive complementarity, objective and subjective elements, all the evidence of core international crimes and quality control in fact finding. Professor Bergsmore, as a professor in the China's most prestigious university, helped the Chinese students and the professors to have the access to the latest international law source, to take part in various international activities, and to be exposed to international judicial systems. He bridges the gaps between Asian countries such as China, India, and Japan with European countries, and promote the exchange among the different legal systems and the traditions. Today's conference is just one of those many. The legal process in the International Criminal Tribunal is set in motion by the prosecutor. There are no investigative judge in the ICTY and the ICC. It is the prosecutor who decides when to initiate a preliminary examination, what to investigate, which person to be prosecuted, and what the charges should be. Once the prosecutor believes there is a sufficient ground to prosecute, an indictment is drafted, and the prosecutor is fully independent in making those decisions. These decisions are not only judicial ones, but also involves a lot of political, diplomatic, and administrative considerations in international arena. Because of the nature of the criminal investigation and the independence of the prosecutor, it is very difficult for the public, the victims, and the governments to know what's going on. There's a little way for the public to follow and monitor the process of the preliminary examination. People may wonder how the prosecutor makes the decision to start the preliminary examination of this case, but why not that case? Is that a selective investigation? Are there enough evidence for the prosecutor to go to the next stage to indict the suspect? Investigation and the prosecution of a suspect, especially the sitting head of the states, is a very sensitive issue, both in judicial and political aspects. And it may become a turning point in the life of an international criminal institute. I would like to take the indictment of Slobodan Milosevic before the ICTY as an example. Milosevic was the president of Serbia from 1997 to the year of 2000. He was indicted in May 1999 during the Kosovo War for crimes against humanity in Kosovo, charges of violating laws and customs of war, grave breaches of Geneva Conventions in Croatia and Bosnia, and the genocide in Bosnia was added a year and a half later. The indictment of Milosevic is now regarded as a turning point in the history of the ICTY, shifting the investigation policy from lower and media ranking suspect to the most senior leaders who allegedly committed the most serious crimes. More and more indictees have been arrested and brought to the seat of the tribunal. The ICTY has indicted 161 persons. After the arrest of Mladic in May 2011, there is no one left on the fugitive list of the ICTY. The indictment of Milosevic was just at the right time when he was losing the power domestically and facing the charges of corruption. Because of the Kosovo War, he was condemned by the European Union and the NATO states. Since his policy was to have a pure Serbia state by persecuting the Muslims and other ethnicities, he became the arch enemy of the Muslims worldwide and the non-aligned movement. Let us not forget The United Nations Security Council resolution to establish the ICC was adopted by all the members of the Security Council unanimously, the first time after the Cold War. His indictment was greatly welcomed and supported by international community. Since then, many fugitives surrendered to the ICTY are arrested by the local authorities. Thus, the ICTY became the most effective international criminal tribunal in terms of arrest of the suspects. In the case of the ICC, the investigation and indictment of the sitting president of Sudan, al-Bashir, is also a turning point. But unfortunately, to the opposite direction. On the 14th July 2008, the prosecutor of the ICC alleged that al-Bashir bore individual criminal responsibility for genocide, crimes against humanity, and war crimes committed since 2003 in Darfur. The court issued an arrest warrant for Mr. al-Bashir on the 4th May 2009, and on 12 July 2010, the court issued a second warrant on 5 counts of war crimes, crimes against humanity, and genocide. From then on, I'm afraid I have to say that ICC began to traverse a rougher and a bumpy road. First, because some members of the in the Security Council, like China and Russia, the ICC will no longer get support from the Security Council, though the Security Council referred case of the Sudanese situation to the ICC. Second, the court's decision is strongly opposed by the African Union, League of Arabic States, non-aligned movement, which have almost one-third of the contracting party to the ICC statute. Those contracting parties states refused or circumvented the implementation of the arrest warrant, blaming the ICC with the selective prosecution. Certainly, the fugitive defined the arrest warrant by traveling to almost 20 countries in the world after the indictment, including the countries outside Asia, such as Iran and China. The ICC spent much more time and energy are endless self-defense against the criticisms from the African countries, even facing the threat of withdrawal of some contracting states from the ICC. Article 42 of the Rome Statute defines the function of the office of the prosecutor, that is, the office of the prosecutor must act independently as a separate organ of the court. But it does not mean that the prosecutor could do whatever he or she likes. There must be some constraints and limits. During the negotiation of the Rome Statute, many delegations were already concerned very much about the power of the prosecutor. Article 57 of the Rome Statute requires the prosecutor to submit a request to the pretrial judge, a pretrial chamber for the purpose of investigation. But the pretrial judge's decision could only focus on whether there's a reasonable and sufficient basis to proceed to a full criminal investigation, not on the policy issues. As a matter of fact, the policy issues like when, how, and to whom should the prosecutor start the preliminary examination and investigation is not only a matter concerning of the prosecution, but closely related to the function and the development of a tribunal as a whole. In the case of the ICTY, there's a procedure which may be called a policy review. A group or bureau composed of the president, vice president, and the presiding judges of the trial chambers determines the indictment concentrate on one or more of the most senior leaders, and those crimes they were charged fall within the jurisdiction of the tribunal. If it meets the standard, then the prosecutor submits the indictment and the supporting evidence to a pretrial judge to review. If the pretrial judge agrees there's a sufficient evidence to bring the accused to trial, he or she will confirm the indictment and issue the arrest warrant. It is my humble suggestion that the ICC may consider the adoption of the similar procedure so that to have effective control over the preliminary examination and the investigation. This conference, in my view, is very pertinent to the issue of the preliminary examination so as to contribute to the better understanding of them, their normative framework, and the aspects requiring improvement. Now, preliminary examination has become one of the most important activities in the ICC, with more important situations under investigation. I believe that the conference could contribute to the strategic and the long-term thinking on broad policy issues such as context, rationale, and the role of the preliminary examination, the suitability of the existing legal framework, methodologies, and the impact of the preliminary examination to and beyond the situation, and the lessons learned from the specific case studies. I wish the conference a great success. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. For more open access audio recordings, films, and publications, go to silrap.org.